you know, we always say an OR minute's not an OR minute in the sterile processing space, but a lot of health systems are still using that OR minute to determine staffing volumes. And you guys can appreciate, you know, better than anyone that the number of items sterilized, which is really commonly used, it's not a good metric because, Bob, as you can relate to, there's a lot of items that you process in your department that you're not necessarily sterilizing.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest, a beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force, fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Brian Reed, founder and CEO of AscendCo Health. Brian has established himself throughout a career working alongside growing healthcare providers and serving as a consultant for surgical inventory management. Through a deep understanding of the surgical instrument market, data analytics, and clinical performance, Brian has designed cutting-edge platforms that leverage technology from outside the industry to bring practical and sustainable solutions to healthcare and build smarter connections between providers and suppliers. Brian's mission moving forward is to spark an industry-wide movement to elevate performance in today's surgical departments through data, analytics, and software. Mike, we love data. We love analytics. We want more of it. It's always a consistent theme here on Beyond Clean. And Brian has been a past guest. We are going through some of our previous guests and bringing them back on, but it has been several years, and Brian has been hard at work since we last spoke with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love talking to Brian. It seems like every time we meet up with him at a conference, I mean, it's just like great idea after great idea is just coming out. And he has such a great way of putting things in such usable terms that I just love talking with this guy. So I'm looking forward to this interview, especially since we'll be talking about one of those consistent headaches for sterile processing managers, staffing.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and to directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023 and there's big news for IST, a closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now for his second appearance here on Beyond Clean is Brian Reed, founder and CEO of AscendCo Health. And we're going to talk about predictive staffing in sterile processing, Brian. So great to have you back on. And I will tell everybody who may be new anyway, for those of you that have been with us since the very beginning, Brian helped us launch the Beyond Clean podcast. He was one of the first three interviews. We actually have two of the first three interviews on the line with us because now member of Beyond Clean, Mike Matthews, was the very first episode. But Brian, you've been a big supporter. We want to thank you so much for helping us kick it off, and we're really pleased to have you back on the show today.
Justin, thanks. It has been a long time, and I've been listening to you guys. You guys keep getting better and better, so I hope I can keep up, but this will be a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm sure you'll keep up. And, you know, predictive staffing, I think this is a fun one to talk about. We've had a few previous episodes that have talked about staffing, but none that have really gotten into data. And data is always a big conversation on the show. We feel like sterile processing needs that data. And so Hank always comes up with really neat titles for these. And he says, the team that data built. So why don't we start with you just talking about traditional staffing models and maybe how they're used and what the information, how it works. And then we can start talking about how to innovate in that area.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, this one is personal and it hits home for a lot of people out there, I think. You know, it's hard for a leader to be sending people home, sending their team home when they don't believe in the algorithm that is making them go home. And for the staff, it's tough for them to be focused on quality over quantity. So this one's real personal. I'm excited to talk about it. You know, I think there's a few traditional staffing models out there that we have to consider. And one is the standard ivory tower decision making, where decisions are being made by administration from a distance. And they're simply saying, well, you know, procedural volume hasn't gone up. We got away with having that many folks last quarter or last year, so let's have the same amount for this next year and for our budget. And that's a dangerous way to approach this because it doesn't take into account, you know, the endless nights of having two staff members have to process and move through a mountain of instrument sets because, you know, surgical equipment is aging and getting older and they have bottlenecks. That's a real stressful environment, and to go through something like that on a daily basis really, really takes a special person. You know, I think we also see, you know, outdated hospital algorithms out there like OR minutes or number of items sterilized. And these are things in the industry that we kind of chuckle about, but they're still very real. You know, we always say an OR minute's not an OR minute in the sterile processing space. But a lot of health systems are still using that OR minute to determine staffing volumes. And you guys can appreciate, you know, better than anyone that the number of items sterilized, which is really commonly used, it's not a good metric because, Bob, as you can relate to, there's a lot of items that you process in your department that you're not necessarily sterilizing, right?
Excellent points, Brian. You know, I can tell you from my years of experience, 15 years to be exact, working in sterile processing, the frustration from the manager director level in sterile processing concerning staffing is a daily nightmare. It's something that we all think about. We all know that we're being measured and we all know that we're being measured incorrectly, but no one's willing to fix it. And like you said, data is the way to go. I was able to work in one of my facilities and get a few extra staff because of data, but I'll look forward to hearing your thoughts. I know you had another thought about this traditional staffing model. So why don't you jump back in and let us have that, and then I'll follow up with you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think there's a couple more. You know, one of them that we don't often talk about and consider is the ROI justifications from suppliers that are trying to position or sell their products. Oftentimes, if you're selling a product and you can utilize a return on investment model to portray a reduction in staffing, if a CFO or administration signs off on something like that, the expectation becomes that they're going to decrease your staff volume. That's a big deal, particularly if you didn't have enough staff to begin with. So we have to be watchful for that. But I think most importantly is these cookie cutter benchmarking systems. I think these are the scariest out of all the categories, and they got to go. There's been way too many occasions where positions are being wrongly eliminated because they're not in the benchmark's ideal statistical percentile. And that kind of cookie cutter approach, we all know, doesn't play out in sterile processing where there's so many variables.
Gosh, great point. 100%. Again, going back to my management days, it's so frustrating. Like you said, an OR minute is not an OR minute. It's frustrating to compare 1 minute for a total hip revision to 1 minute from a breast biopsy, for example. We know the numbers of trays that we have on a total hip revision versus a breast biopsy, and there's just, it's monumental. And so to think about that, it's just crazy. When you think about it, and then you start talking about cutting staff. I've been in many, many departments across the country, and I've rarely seen one that's staffed appropriately. And I always tell folks when I go in to be aware of that I'm likely going to tell them not only not to cut staff, but they're going to need more based on my previous experience. And I'm sure you've seen that in your travels as well.
Yeah, but I can empathize. We had a roundtable a couple of months back, and we had, you know, a variety of leaders coming in and just talking about this staffing. And I can't do it justice, but there was one particular story from a gentleman from Denver, and you could see how heavy the idea of sending people home because, you know, there was cancellations or just the volume for the day was a little bit lower. And then, you know, the idea of having them come back the next day and be motivated and focused on quality. You could see the way he described the story, how heavily that weighed on him. And, it really made it real.
You know, Brian, just listening to this, it's bringing back a whole lot of bad memories from when I was a manager, because literally everything you're saying is causing my blood pressure to rise.
Right.
Because I've been there. I mean, I completely agree. I think anybody who's been in management has lived this world and has even lived through the time when they bring in the quote unquote experts with their, you know, extremely generalized benchmarks that say, oh, you've got too many staff, and the whole, you know, for the past year, you've been tearing out your hair saying too many. What are you saying? I don't have enough. And it's very difficult to try and fight back against that. And so I think one thing that makes your model so completely unique is the ability to use data. Now, one thing I think we've talked about before is that lots of SPDs have data, but it seems like very rarely does anybody really know how to use it. So how does data change how staffing should be done?
So Mike, you mentioned a really good point. And this is something we all have to address because we have a culture issue here. Really, you know, what we find often is that the frontline managers and the frontline folks, but the managers that are really involved in the process, they have good instinct and intuition. They know how many staff members they need, but they have to find a way to quantitatively justify that number. So in most cases, when we're out there, you know, in many ways, we're reinforcing through data and through justification quantitatively, you know, how much staff somebody already thinks that they need. But what's really interesting that I wanted to bring up is just coincidentally, we recently did a research study, and we were talking about return on investment in sterile processing. So 83% of the feedback that we got was 83% of leaders out there have never used an ROI model in sterile processing. And 50% of them don't even believe that it's possible to justify or rationalize or measure the impact of, you know, adding new equipment or adding new staff or bringing technology into an apartment. So that's the starting point right there. You need quantitative data if you want to tell a story outside of your four walls where the understanding of what you do and the criticality of it is lower. You need that data. But if people don't even believe in that to begin with, then we have a real problem that needs to be addressed.
Well, and that makes perfect sense. I mean, for a number of reasons, because like we've talked about before on this show, that usually a manager of a department distinguishes themselves by being a really good technician, or perhaps a really good scrub tech, or you know, a good OR nurse. But the manager position is a business position, right? And so, which is a completely different skill set. And so it's not surprising then that business decisions, business-like decisions that need to be data-driven are going to face some challenges when they're being looked at by people who aren't business trained. And it makes it even more difficult when we realize that the people who are making the decisions, the CFOs, the CEOs, they want that data. They want that ROI. That's the language that they speak. And so when you aren't able to speak that language, I mean, you're starting off on the wrong foot to get from the get-go.
Mike, it's a good point. You know, and I really think one of the areas that these, you know, so traditional models, so to speak, have fallen short is that they don't take into account the level of detail required to understand the level of stress that the department and the people actually have on them. So it sounds really simple to us, but, you know, one case can have one instrument set and another case, the same time, can have 10 instrument sets. One instrument set can have 20 instruments and another instrument set can have 100 or 120 instruments. Those two different scenarios have a vastly different impact on how much the team and how much work that they have to do. I don't think these models that are out there today are accounting for distractions. So phone calls, the percentage of last-minute add-ons, the amount of time that people are spending looking for missing instruments. Those are all variables that are unique to each facility. And so those are the kind of things that need to be also be accounted for when you're coming up with a staffing model. So a benchmark model may say, sure, you should have 5 staff members for this volume of cases, but if this particular facility has a systemic data issue where they have inaccuracies and people throwing away instruments in the operating room, well, your level of time that will go up for looking for missing instrumentation. So those things need to be measured naturally. I also think that they're not taking into account how long things take if you're doing them right. So, you know, around best practice. And that's the really big difference. And what's made us so unique in this is that we've looked at what is the time to do each step of the process if you're doing it well and you're following best practice.
Fantastic. So, Brian, how can better/more data change this model? How does data impact that decision-making from the administrator's perspective?
Yeah. So, you know, there's really two parts to that, Bob. One is, you know, determining your volume of staff that you need based on the data. And I'll get to that and I'll answer your question. But the other is once you've determined that quantity of staff, it's retaining that staff. You know, otherwise you're always going to have problems with quality and consistency. So if you don't have good, you know, morale, a good culture, if you're not motivating your team, and if you're not paying them enough to endure the kind of stress that goes on in that department, they're not going to stay and you're always going to have issues. But today we're really focused on that first step, right? How do you justify the level of staff that you really need? And I think what has really made us unique in this process is if you look out at most hospitals, when they're interacting with suppliers or vendors outside of their hospital, you know, 80%+ of the time they're interacting with a sales rep, a regional sales manager, or in many cases, a clinical, you know, specialist that has a shared perspective. What we've done is we've surrounded our clients with project managers. So we come up with very systematic processes, analysts, so we can interpret data, and software engineers, so we can seek to automate and scale everything that we're doing in these facilities. So when we had one of our really great clients approach us and ask us for our help in creating a predictive staff model, of course, we jumped at the opportunity, but we sat down with them in a really collaborative environment, which we've continued to do with other clients as they've also asked us to help in these areas and across the board, really. And we devised a plan, a very systematic plan where we were going to look at the data. And the first step really is to create a sample size for that can represent everything being processed. So, for example, take a small set, a medium set, and a large set. And you would ultimately associate all of the trays and items flowing through your facility to those trays. Now, when we did this, we used 10 different items for a sample size, so it's a little bit more complex than that. But that's ultimately what you want to do as your first step. Your second step is about diagramming your entire process. Every single step of the process in your workflow that needs to be measured. And there's something that I'll point out here. You can't forget about the side areas where time really builds up. So one would be, as I mentioned earlier, the missing instruments. There's a tremendous amount of time that people spend looking for missing instrumentation, and that really adds up over time. It's just like that stat, you know, of how long people spend each year looking for their keys. The other, which was surprising, was the time that it takes to apply PPE in decontamination. So those are all things that take time, and they're a part of that process. And you need to create a workflow diagram for really for every step of your process that you want to measure. The next step is to record all those reprocessing times. What we did is we decided to take video recordings. So we essentially created like a director sheet where we had a start of the scene and an end of the scene. So an example of that would be picking up an instrument tray from the dumbwaiter and walking it over to the sink. Another scene would be taking that instrument tray, picking it up, and putting it through that sink for gross decontamination. And of course, a 2-well sink and a 3-well sink take different times. So you have to measure that based on the equipment you have, but then you have to look at the time that's associated with your sample size. Does that make sense?
Brian, it definitely does make sense. Why don't you kind of keep fleshing out that thought though? Because I think you got more there.
So yeah, Justin, you know, when you've gotten through that process of looking at the time it takes for all of your steps, and keep in mind, accounting for best practice, you have to account for the different types of staff that you also have. So we really broke it out into three categories: expert, novice, and beginner. And when we were doing the recordings, something interesting happened. The beginners didn't want to be recorded. So we really focused in on the experts and novices. One of the interesting things that we found there is that in many cases, the novices were just as fast as the experts, but with exception of some of the more technical areas like Da Vinci reprocessing or flexible scope reprocessing. But we came up with, based on looking at those novices and experts, we came up with a calculation for the staff that was needed, and it was flawed. And it was flawed because we weren't looking and taking account of the beginner staff. And it turns out this particular facility that we were initially doing this in when we learned this, about 60% of their staff were beginners. So when we went and we looked at them and we accounted for that, we found numbers all over the place, but generally speaking, they were taking twice as long as the novices and the experts to do a task. And so by beginner, we were looking at that as from 0 to 7 months. And in many cases, those beginners were even distracting the experts. So when we re-ran the numbers, really accounting for their ratio of beginner staff, the number went up significantly. But what was so cool about that is it showed the value of having experienced staff. And what was really evident because we recorded it is even though the novices and the expert staff were processing things around a similar time, the experts were packing much more quality into that same amount of time. And that was really obvious when you were looking at the tapes. So once you get through this systematical process of measuring everything, right, utilizing your sample size, measuring every step and part of the process, you know, recording that process, then it's a matter of extrapolating that data across your entire inventory based on your historical flow. And that allows you to justify staffing volumes based on best practice.
Well, not only best practice, but your mix of experience, right? So here's my question on that. If we're going to go to maybe somebody to borrow, I'll just borrow Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point, right? Is there like a statistical tipping point where so many of that inexperienced staff is hitting a breaking point with the experienced staff? To your point, it can reduce productivity because they're spending more time being a resource and helping, you know, mask some of that inexperience versus actually packing quality, right? Like you just said. So do you notice that there's a tipping point there, or are you just accounting for it with a metric?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but here's what I can tell you, Justin, is that you wonder why this has happened. And when you compare it to nursing, it's a really simple equation. There is tons of research out there that prove if you increase the number of nurses, that that has a direct correlation on how positive the patient's outcome is. So the more nurses, the better the outcome. And this calculation is just more complicated. It has an equal impact as the nurse, but there's more steps in between that technician and the things that they have to do and how that translates to a quality outcome. So I don't know the answer to what is that inflection point or that tipping point when things fall apart. But what I do know is we have to take the time to measure those steps and connect the dots between good quality expert technicians and better patient outcomes. And that's possible. And that's what's really neat about this.
Yeah, it is interesting. And you borrow that comparison with nursing, but you also know that many nurses are coming in with some prior training and education. And in so many cases, sterile processing has to bring in somebody who's completely green, and then they get that institutional training. So I'm certain that some of that is dependent on just the training model that's in place when you bring in new and inexperienced technicians to help with that staffing. Here's the thing too, with the data and everything that you're talking about, I'm just wondering like what the staff applications would be from, and I think you might have already kind of touched on this, but really from a manager level versus looking at the department and all of that down to, well, when is the best time to have different people in the department and scheduling that? Are there any implications in that regard as well?
Well, there really is. And you find out a lot of these things as you move beyond that initial justification. And that's really where we've spent, you know, a tremendous amount of our time today. But there's predictive staffing is a journey. So where we are today isn't even close to where we'll be down the road, and we're really far from the destination. Now, granted, we're further along than anybody else out there, but we still have a long way to go. And it's when you get into this sort of predictive staffing and you're running simulations, you can see things that the numbers don't even really tell you. So for example, one of the things we were looking at was adding assembly stations and adding additional technicians to help with the bottleneck. But in running simulation, we were able to see that instead of adding 5 new assembly techs, if we could minimize distraction by just bringing in 2 liaisons, we could have the same result. So that was very interesting. So what this does for the managers is it gives them something to go back to and pinch test, right? Then use the numbers to tell their business case and why they're making the decisions that they're making. The way that it impacts the staff is, and you see it, it's a significant change. All of a sudden, they get to focus on the quality of the work more than just the quantity. And people want to do a good job. People want to have pride in what they do. And so if you can give them the ability to really, you know, focus on best practice and be the best in class department, then that starts to create a vacuum for the kind of people you attract. So I think it's really going to be about, you know, using this information, using new technologies in the space to start attracting talented people that aren't just interested in a job, but they're interested in a career path in an area that they can make a difference. And I think that that's what this information is going to do.
Well, it's hard to imagine anybody saying, no, we don't want the data. No, we don't want to try something new. But the truth is, you and I both know this, there's always resistance to new ideas, new strategies, and new concepts because it takes people out of their comfort zone. And one of the things, having been in sales myself, is, you know, managing objections. And so I think as we're getting ready to wrap the interview, one of the questions I'd put to you is, what types of objections do you run into with taking a look at this model and considering its application? And then how would you manage those objections?
Yeah, so it would really be an awful situation if you got through all of this groundwork and all of these justifications, and if the person's desk that you put it on didn't take the time to look at it. And you can see that happening, particularly in healthcare. So what we've done, and really what we learned by working alongside some of our partners, is that the decision makers have to be a part of this process from the very beginning. There has to be buy-in, there has to be understanding, and there has to be agreement when you're pulling different levers, like beginner staff ratios and when to set that time that a staff member is no longer a beginner, but in the novice stage. So people have to be a part of that process to really understand and also buy in and agree with the numbers. That would be my recommendation. And of course, you know, there's always numbers out there that are unknowns, like, you know, percentage of add-ons, or we also have to take into account that people aren't robots. So you have to build in a certain amount of time for chatter and downtime. And so what we've done is we've taken the kind of numbers that they're using in manufacturing, and we've applied it to this space. And that also, you know, really accounts for time training as well. So there's a certain percentage of time that, just based on the vision, mission, value of that health system and their philosophy on education, that they want to be training those staff members on best practice and reminding them of what the new best practices are as they evolve. So those things have to be built into the numbers, so you really need participation.
It's almost like this data could force an organization to develop a career path and a career ladder for their sterile processing technicians.
Yeah. You know, one of the coolest parts about what we do is so many people don't understand sterile processing. And you guys have seen this too. Once you educate people and you use information to educate them, people become fascinated about this part of the industry. It's amazing when you're talking to even people outside of the industry, and you've all heard those responses, I had no idea. This is a very, very interesting part of healthcare. And when people understand the complexity of this asset, how everything is interrelated in the process, the complexity of these processes, and how much the people working in those departments have to know, they become really interested. So that's one of the funnest parts, is using data, using information, right? Building collaborative teams and working through this stuff together, because people become fascinated by it. And there's a lot of room for improvement. That makes it a lot of fun.
I truly believe that this is a space that can be interesting to the general public, and that at some point the general public will become much more aware of the challenges in this industry. And it happens to be a goal of Beyond Clean as well. And Brian, I appreciate that you share that mission to get people interested and intrigued and to give them data to think about the challenges. And obviously, we all share, you know, a common interest in the fact that there really does need to be a paradigm shift, and it will be data that drives that. So I want to thank you for coming on for your second appearance on the show and continuing to talk about how data is driving the industry forward.
Well, we're really grateful to be a part of it. And thanks to you guys. You guys are doing a wonderful job, and I always enjoy talking to you guys. So anytime, and keep doing what you're doing. We really appreciate it.
That was Brian Reed, founder and CEO of AscendCo Health, talking about predictive staffing and sterile processing. And Brian always does a great job of educating us, Bob. And again, talking about the practical usage of data. And one thing that I really thought was very important that he mentioned at the very end in the section about objections was about getting all the right people to the table, because to his point, there's nothing worse than doing all of that work with the data and then presenting it, and nobody really understands the foundation from which the conversation started.
Yep. Couldn't agree more, Justin. It's a problem in every facility. It's that big, when Mike was talking earlier in the interview about this position being business related, the business people get the business stuff, but they don't get the clinical stuff. And the clinical people get the clinical stuff, but don't understand the business stuff. And we have to figure out a way to bring that together, and data is the way to do it. I think we could absolutely schedule podcasts number 2 through 10 with Brian to get through this, because it's amazing information and it's a much needed topic that everybody's got to grasp and learn, so we can make sure that, like you said, the right folks are at the table and we're hiring the right folks and we're doing all the things we need to do to make sure we're running this department more efficiently and in a better way.
It's almost like we could do a whole data series of like 8 episodes with Brian and certainly cover all those bases and share best practices, no doubt. But that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd appreciate a rating and a review, because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.